Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining me now is Democratic political strategist and founding partner in Kirstein Agni, Carl Agni. He has conducted research for hundreds of political campaigns at every level, from municipal elections to congressional and gubernatorial contests, to directing national research and message development for the Gore-Lieberman campaign. He serves as senior advisor to Democracy Corps, a nonprofit advocacy group he helped form in 1999 with James Carville, Stan Greenberg, and Bob Shrum. Welcome to Background Briefing, Carl Agni.
Thank you.
And clearly the loss of what was a safe Democratic seat in New York to a Republican, the seat that Anthony Weiner had, must be sending shockwaves through the Democratic Party. Is there any anomalies there or anything you can point to that doesn't suggest other than bad news? I know that, for example, the former mayor, Ed Koch, a Democrat, weighed in on behalf of the Republican. But there has to be, I think, some other explanation here, surely.
Well, there's several explanations. Special elections get blown out of proportion disproportionately because there's nothing else for the media to focus on. 3 months ago, in May, Republican was thrown out an overwhelming Republican seat in upstate. That had no larger political, national implications than this does. What's happening and what's been happening for several cycles now, going back to 2006, 2008, 2010, is voters are taking out their frustrations on the dominant party, on the incumbent party, and that is happening in locations, not just who's the dominant party in Washington, but who's been the dominant party in a specific region. Voters are so incredibly frustrated with what's happening in Washington. They're lashing out in any way they can, trying desperately, I think, to send a message to those in power, to those with power, whether in Washington or in local elections, to try to get this message across, to try to, get them to break the status quo. And I think that that's what was happening yesterday. In an overwhelmingly Democratic district, you saw the voters lashing out against the Democrats, and it's going to happen in a Republican district in upstate a few months ago, and it's going to continue happening in locations throughout the country until something changes in Washington.
So if it's a plague on all of their houses, how do you develop a strategy here as a Democrat? Because I thought that what the president was counting on in his recent speech to the Congress was that the Republicans are getting an earful when they go home and that he's trying to shame them into action. My sense is that they probably don't want to do anything to improve the economy because they're going to benefit from a bad economy.
If the president's strategy is to shame the Republicans in Congress, there's no hope to that strategy. I think they've proven that overwhelmingly. But I think the fundamental problem is, as you said, the president sought to speak to the country and he went before Congress. I think the Washington-centric point of view that seems to still be driving the administration's agenda is a big part of the problem. Nothing is going to happen in Washington. I think if the president walked in and offered the Republicans everything, and I'm not suggesting that he should, but if he were to offer them everything that they were asking for, they would just ask for something different and move the goalpost back even further. They have no interest and no incentive to actually pass legislation to make this economy better, and I think the administration and Democrats in Congress need to realize that. If they're going to make a difference, they need to get out of Washington, and they need to figure out ways that do not require legislation passing the House or getting more than 60 votes in the Senate in order to make a difference, because if those are their only answers and their only prescriptions, they're going to be frustrated, and they're going to go into 2012 with even more frustration and more failures on their agenda.
Again, I'm speaking with Carl Agni, Democratic political strategist, and we're talking about the loss of a safe Democratic seat in New York that belonged to Anthony Weiner. So how do you then, clearly the people who captured a grassroots strategy, even though it was largely an AstroTurf operation conducted by Karl Rove and Dick Armey, are the Tea Party. So is there a left-wing version of a Tea Party anywhere on the back burner?
There isn't right now. Always the party that's in opposition has more energy and more enthusiasm than the grassroots. Certainly we saw that with Obama in 2008. We're seeing it with the Republicans now. We know from evidence all over the country, polling evidence, and what we just see on the ground, that progressive grassroots are dispirited right now. What it will take to get them enthusiastic will be some sort of an agenda, some sort of a positive image to get behind, but it will also be an opponent. If the opposition in the 2012 race is Mitt Romney, if it's Rick Perry, if it's Michelle Bachmann, whoever it might be, that will rally and focus progressive grassroots in a way that what's happening in Washington right now, a debate that's entirely about process rather than ideas, is never going to do.
But surely there's a world of difference between Perry and Mitt Romney in terms of who the president would benefit from running against. Surely, from a Democratic point of view, Perry would be a gift in a very difficult election year.
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. I think that Romney has tremendous problems with the Republican grassroots. I think that there are large segments of the Republican primary electorate that are not comfortable with his religion. I think there are others that are very uncomfortable with the fact that less than two decades ago, he was trying to run to the left of Ted Kennedy for a Senate seat in Massachusetts. He's got a lot of problems in the base, and what those are going to mean in the general election are very different weaknesses than what Perry would present in terms of appealing to middle-of-the-road voters, but could also be just as powerful. So where the electoral math works out, we're not really going to know at this point, but I think all of the Republican frontrunners are severely flawed.
Well, but I think isn't the point, though, that if Mitt Romney can get through the primary process, then he's a formidable candidate. The best hope for Democrats is that he won't get through the very hard-right Tea Party scrutiny that you just mentioned.
Potentially, but we have to see what happens and how he gets through that Republican primary and what he has to do to get through it. So those are all unknowns at this stage.
I see. So tell me, though, Carl Agnew, what you have in mind about a grassroots strategy. If it's a plague on all of their houses, if there's just this kind of boiling anger back home with their representatives, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, how do the parties differentiate themselves, particularly the Democrats at this point? Because, you know, the Tea Party seems to be driving the Republican agenda, and that's pretty clear what that is. There's not a lot of clarity that I can detect on the other side.
And there's not. And again, having to create an agenda that there's two different ways, really, of doing this. The president should be articulating his ideas and his policy prescriptions, but should not be counting on actually passing them through the Congress. He should be going out to the American people and talking to them about them, and he should be finding ways to make them happen that don't require congressional approval. There's literally billions and billions of economic development or job creation money spread. It's already been allocated by Congress, spread across 9 different agencies through the executive branch, probably 30-some different programs. That money's there, and it's being used in a very bifurcated way right now. The president needs to marshal his resources, nobody has, and maybe reallocate some of that or be a little creative in his efforts. There also, you know, when we look at this economy, we know how disappointed voters are, and we know how negatively they view the economy right now, but there's a lot of good things happening out there. A lot of the new energy ideas that the president has, there are no million-job silver bullets out there. Everyone understands that. But there are good things happening. Small companies, startups, small clusters of companies throughout the country. And there's good news that the president is not trumpeting. And voters don't understand what the new economy that the president wants to create looks like because they've never seen it before. He needs to go out there and show them. He needs to show them the good news. Tell them about the successes that are happening. And I think voters are smart enough to look at some of those and to see how they can scale and to see how they can be successful with a combination of public and private investment. I think the president also needs to go out there and put pressure on the banks and on the companies. We know the companies are sitting on record amounts of profits right now. They're not hiring. The banks are sitting on the money the taxpayers gave them. They're not lending. These companies that are doing good things, that are positioned to grow, that are positioned to be successful in an increasingly competitive global economy, don't have the resources that they need. The president needs to go out there and be their champion. He still has the bully pulpit. He still is an incredibly persuasive communicator. He can put pressure on these banks. He can tell good stories. He can get a message out there that rallies the grassroots and shows people something other than the negativity and the nihilism that they're hearing from the Tea Party.
Well, it looks, though, like the Republicans and the Tea Party have framed stimulus as a dirty word, like a liberal being a dirty word. Stimulus is now a dirty word. And their argument is that we've already tried that and it's failed. And of course, you know, a lot of economists on the left, like Krugman and others, were saying from day one that it wasn't enough. And we know that the Republicans aren't going to cooperate on this latest Jobs for America package, except in terms of tax cuts. You're saying, Carl Agnew, that there's a lot of money floating around that can be used in a creative way. Do you think that the president can reinvent this jobs narrative? Because my concern is that there doesn't seem to be a level playing field in terms of communication here. For example, the deficit narrative is the strongest narrative vis-a-vis the economy. And it's most economists think it's an insane idea. And in fact, Wall Street repudiated the debt ceiling deal, the hostage crisis resolution. The market tanked as soon as it happened because you're taking $1 trillion out of a sick economy. It doesn't make any sense to any sentient economist. So I'm concerned about not just the need for a message, but who are the messengers that are going to carry this? I mean, do you accept my premise that it's not a level playing field? Or, I mean, just that Republicans better at using the media than the Democrats?
I think the Republicans have been better at having a consolidated message, and I think that having a negative message is always easier than having a positive one. I think what voters have increasingly rejected is not the ideas, but the process coming out of Washington. To this day, voters have no idea what's in the health reform package. What they hated was the process that created it, and that was what they expressed their displeasure over. And we see the same thing with the deficit, and the brinksmanship that happened with that deal. Voters have very little understanding of the specifics of the plan. What they understand is the ridiculously self-centered approach that both parties took that was all about partisan advantage and no focus, as far as voters could see, on what was actually best for the country. That's what they're rejecting, and that's what Republicans are succeeding in creating, is a dynamic where voters become increasingly less confident in government to be able to accomplish anything, which in turn feeds the cynicism and the negativity the Republicans are counting on to take resources away from government and therefore make it further ineffectual and creates a cycle.
But Carl Agnew, one of the problems with the health care bill is that it was so backloaded that the public have no concept of the benefits there because they're not going to come into 2014. I mean, that to me is inexplicable, but that's apparently the way it was crafted.
It was, and you know, I wouldn't pretend to know enough about the specifics of health care policy to say whether or not that was necessary in order to do it right. What I do know is that nothing was communicated to voters about how it was going to benefit them, either short-term or long-term, in a way that was consistent and persuasive.
So you were saying that there's no way in the world that Democrats or the president can develop a strategy that would shame the Republicans into doing the right thing for America, particularly with so many people out of work. And it just does seem extraordinary that these policies that have been put in place, and particularly with this debt ceiling deal, seem to unnecessarily impoverish millions of Americans. We just learned from the Census Bureau that 46.2 Americans live in poverty, many of them children. It doesn't sound like the basic appeal to compassion and decency is working, if you judge by the Tea Party CNN presidential presentation the other night, where Ron Paul was asked about a hypothetical question about a young person who couldn't afford health insurance and had a terrible accident. What should be done? And Ron Paul said, "Well, you know, everybody's responsible for their own freedom of choice." And then people and Blitzer said, "Well, would you cut him off and let him die?" And people in the audience said, "Yeah, yeah," they cheered. So it seems to me that there's a kind of cynicism out there in the electorate. Do you think that there is any possible traction in appealing to the better angels of our nature?
Yeah, I don't think that we should confuse Tea Party primary voters who go to a Republican debate with persuadable voters who will actually determine this election. They're very, very different. I think that there is, but again, you have to be able to break through the profound and I think well-earned cynicism that these voters bring to the table. You have to be able to show them that something works. They're being, I think, a little bit selfish and a little bit short-sighted and saying, you know, I want to keep what's mine. I want to do as much as I can to take care of myself because I have no faith in government or other institutions to do right by me. And it's a short-sighted selfishness, I think, that's taking hold. If we can communicate, I think that the vast majority of Americans still believe in the common good. They still believe that government has a role to promote the common welfare, but they're not sure the government can actually do that job anymore. It should. They believe that, but they're not sure if they have the confidence in it to do so anymore. And they don't want to see any more of their money wasted on inefficiency and corruption. They'd rather keep it for themselves if that's where it's going to go. But if it's actually going to go to make a difference, if the schools are actually going to educate the children, they're happy to fund the schools. But the schools have to prove that they're going to do that before people are willing to give them any more money. So that's the situation that we're in now. I think voters are being a little bit selfish, and they are being a little bit short-sighted, but it's because of this growing skepticism and cynicism toward government. We have to be able to show results, and that's where, again, I think it's incumbent upon the president and Democrats to get out there and to tell some of the good news that's happening in this economy, not to let the bad news and the nihilism of the Tea Party dominate the debate.
Well, but hasn't, to some extent, the president undercut the assets that the Democrats have, because the Democrats have been the champions of protecting Social Security and Medicare. And we know from that earlier by-election in upstate New York where the Democrats had the opposite effect to what happened with the Wiener seat, where the Democrat won in a Republican district. because of the Medicare issue and protecting Medicare. And now the president's suggesting that we can put Medicare up on the block as well. I wonder whether that basically is self-defeating for a Democratic leader.
Well, yeah, this is one of those places, and I think we saw similar dynamics in the lead-up to the 1996 election, where congressional Democrats and the White House are going to see their short-term political interests perhaps diverge. I think congressional Democrats understand that's not a place that they can go. There's real vulnerability for Republicans on these issues, and that they need to make sure that they hold the line and take the right course. The president is trying to, you know, as we've heard for years now, trying to position himself, it seems, as the adult in the room and the person who's willing to hear both sides and try to reach some kind of an agreement. That hasn't gotten him very far policy-wise thus far, but we'll see how it plays out over the next year.
Well, just to finally sort of to wrap this up, Carl Agnew, in terms of a cynical electorate and a cynical and a skeptical electorate, that you've, I think, made a very, very clear case is that it exists and it's in effect a plague on both of their houses, and that anything to do with Washington is greeted with a great deal of skepticism, if not scorn. In that environment, is it possible that the president could expose the basic cynicism of the Republican strategy, which seems to me to be fundamentally un-American? If you have a situation where we have a very sick economy, where millions of our fellow Americans, 46.2 million, are living in poverty, many, many are losing jobs, and if the European Eurozone goes south, we'll probably have even deeper recession. There is, you know, it's the right thing to do is to get people back to work. That is pretty manifest, and it seems to be un-American to deliberately want the economy to get worse in order to improve your selfish political career. And that seems to be, I think, in fairness, that is the Republican strategy. They're not cooperating with him because there's nothing in it for him.
It's true whether or not you can convince the voters. The problem here, I think, is that voters at this point are unsure what they get from the Democrats, what they can count on. They have very little faith in the Republicans, very little, and they have almost zero confidence the Republicans actually have a plan to get the economy back on track. But they believe at a minimum they get reduced government spending, less waste, less inefficiency if they put Republicans in power. So they get that bare minimum guarantee if they vote for a Republican. And right now I'm not sure if they know what they get when they vote for a Democrat. And I think that's the problem. The Democrats have to let voters know what is it that you get when you vote for a Democrat. And right now, voters aren't really sure.
Well, Carl Agnew, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Carl Agnew, who's a Democratic political strategist and a founding partner at Gerstein Agnew, a Washington, D.C.-based political strategy firm. He has conducted research for hundreds of political campaigns at every level, from municipal elections to congressional and gubernatorial contests to directing national research and message development for the Gore-Lieberman campaign. He serves as senior advisor to Democracy Corps, a nonprofit advocacy group he helped found in 1999 with James Carville, Stan Greenberg, and Bob Schrum. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment talking about the crisis in the Eurozone.